You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hillary Rodham Clinton has been in the national political spotlight since her husband's first run for the presidency in 1991, but that light has been frequently rather harsh. As First Lady, she was criticized for conferring with the president on policy and for supporting him through his scandals. She was derided for her extensive and lengthy proposal for health care reform, for wearing hair bands, and for her refusal to cede the Democratic nomination to Barack Obama during the late stages of the 2008 campaign. That defeat might have meant the end of her political career and presidential ambitions, but instead, she reinvented herself as a stateswoman and used her celebrity and knowledge of the power structure in Washington to transform the State Department and herself. In their new book called HRC, Jonathan Allen and Amy Parnas focus on Hillary's reinvention and her impressive work as Secretary of State. It's published by Crown, and I'm very pleased it has brought them to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Your book begins near the end of Hillary's bid to become the Democratic nominee for president in 2008. Had she been keeping a tally of political favors and betrayals?
Yeah, she did. She had aides who at the end of the campaign sat together in the campaign headquarters and put out a list of Microsoft Excel spreadsheet of everybody who had treated her well and everybody who had treated her poorly. Of course, the more interesting is the people who were treated poorly. The folks that treated her well got thank you notes, things like that. The folks who treated her poorly ended up, in some cases, getting visits from Bill Clinton to their districts in favor of other candidates in 2010 and 2012. A little bit of a political payback game going on there.
And playing hardball.
Absolutely.
But the best part is that they ranked it from 7 to 1. And so you had people like John Kerry getting a 7, people like Chris Van Hollen, Ted Kennedy, they were all 7. So they were basically treated as enemies, enemy combatants.
This like Nixon's enemy list?
It's not quite like Nixon's enemies list, but there's a certain feel of that political retribution. You know, it's interesting. We've got the Chris Christie thing going on right now nearby here. And, you know, there's a difference, I think, in the public's mind between going after other politicians for payback and doing things that that hurt the public. You know, we don't know Chris Christie's involvement at this point, but certainly his aides were obviously involved in punishing the public. And so there, I think there's a little bit of a difference, but the desire to keep up with enemies and supporters is very strong in politicians.
Well, were the Clintons unusual in that even in defeat, they still had the means for effective punishment?
Well, you saw that in 2010 and 2012. You saw Bill Clinton on the campaign trail just kind of taking out the people who didn't support Hillary. If they didn't support her, he was rooting for their opponent, and he would be out there campaigning time and time again. And sure enough, they fell like flies. They were gone, one after the next. So, you know, people say, what is the relevancy of such a hit list? I mean, it came back to haunt people years later, and I'm sure that we will see the effects of it in 2016. And
although they also understood that some people had no choice. They were related to others who might have been part of the Obama campaign, or there were all sorts of pressures on them. So it was the ones they felt most betrayed by who they gave the sevens?
Right, that was the gradations from all. That's why they needed 7 gradations, so that there could be mitigating factors. If you remember the Illinois congressional delegation, for instance, from Barack Obama's home state, you got a little bit of a pass. If you were a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, John Lewis, the civil rights icon, a little bit more of a pass for supporting Barack Obama. But, you know, it's interesting. You ask about the relevancy of this going forward and why it matters today, and I think, you know, and the ability of the Clintons to reward and punish. Democrats of all stripes want Bill Clinton and in some cases Hillary Clinton to come campaign for them. So they have the ability to deny favors to a broad swath of the Democratic Party. And in addition to that, because of that, have the ability to go in and play in primaries in a way that can knock people out of office.
On the other hand, she also had an assistant, Rob Russo, send over 16,000 thank you notes to the people who had scored well.
She did. 5,000 of them were handwritten by him, which is quite a feat when you think about it. But this is what the Clintons do. You know, people ask, how are they different from Barack Obama? Barack Obama isn't the kind of guy who is known to do this kind of thing. He's known as this very public guy who's very gregarious on the stage, but not so good one-on-one. The Clintons have that kind of special touch, and you saw that in the thank you notes.
And one of the criticisms of Obama has been that he's less effective because there's never a political consequence to anyone crossing him or voting against his legislation. Maybe Bill should have given him some advice along those lines.
Well, the ties that bind with the Clintons are very, very strong, and it plays both ways, positive and negative. And Obama just doesn't have those ties with people in Washington, and he didn't really seek to develop them when he got there. He's starting to try to reach out more now, but a lot of people aren't willing to grab his hand.
What ultimately convinced her that her hope for the nomination was a lost cause?
Well, I think she saw it coming to her over time. I think, you know, if she would have run the campaign that she was running at the end of the campaign, kind of at the start of it, she maybe would have won. But I think, you know, they saw it coming slowly, slowly, and aides kind of tell those stories in the book. But she learned a few lessons from the campaign. She basically called aides and close friends to her office and even her house and said, where did we go wrong? And she learned some lessons. She learned that she should have played up maybe embracing the fact that she was a woman candidate a little more, much like President Obama did when he was on the campaign trail. She also learned that President Obama ran circles around her campaign in terms of technology. And she learned that there was a kind of arrogance at the top of her campaign. And so I think that if she does run in 2016, and we're fairly confident that she does, and you can read about that in the book, but we think that it's going to be a very different campaign.
Well, she had to overcome the resistance to a woman being president. Of course, Barack Obama had to overcome the resistance to a black man becoming president. But one of the criticisms was that she hesitated to capitalize on the fact that she was a woman.
That's right. I mean, Barack Obama's unique place in history, I think, you know, may have hurt him with some voters, but it was certainly a positive as well with some voters. There were voters who were very happy to be electing the first African-American president. I think, you know, Hillary Clinton really tried not to talk about herself as a woman. And if you think about women of her generation, I think they did everything they could in the professional world to not talk about being a woman. Now, here she is as a presidential candidate, and perhaps the best thing she could have done in a Democratic primary is appeal to women on the level of being able to make history. She chose not to do it. I think a lot of people close to her, and probably at this point she herself thinks that that was a mistake that they should have taken advantage – or a missed opportunity to take advantage
of. What was the conversation Hillary had on the flight to Unity, New Hampshire, where they were going for a photo op to bury the campaign hatchet?
Well, so the conversation basically was Hillary Clinton telling Barack Obama she would do anything that he wanted of her, but it was really going to be a hard hoe to get her supporters and her donors and other folks behind him. She wanted him to have a realistic sense of that it wasn't just going to be a flip overnight from them into his column.
Well, there was, I'm sure, a lot of distrust and dislike between the two camps. On the other hand, there was talk about him offering her the vice presidency, and was that ever likely?
I don't think it was ever under serious consideration. Even when he decided to pick her for Secretary of State, his brain trust reacted with everything from raised eyebrows to really strong pushback, saying, how could this possibly work, David Axelrod said. So there's no evidence that he really thought about her for very long for vice president.
On the other hand, it was a brilliant move making her Secretary of State, although we'll get into why she turned the job down two or three times. But how would you characterize her concession speech? Was the Obama camp satisfied with it?
Well, we talked about the woman aspect of this. And, you know, what's interesting, and we talk about this in the book, is there's a scene where she's talking to her campaign aides about how do we get across this message. And her aides are basically pushing. One aide in particular, a female, is sitting at the table and saying, you really should talk about the fact that, you know, this is you are a woman and you appeal to so many. Look at all these people who really supported you during this race. And so you kind of saw a little bit of a change in the direction of the speech where she did embrace it at the end. And you had the very famous 18 million cracks line, which we found out in the book came from Jim Kennedy, which is a longtime Clinton hand. He basically threw that in at the last minute via BlackBerry. So I think that
Bill also went over the draft, didn't he?
Oh, yes. And he always goes over drafts. And we tell another story in the book, actually, in her Denver speech, where there's a scene where she's practicing her speech. She comes back to a hotel where she's surrounded by her aides, and she's looking over the speech again, and she says, this doesn't look familiar. What happened to the speech? And her aide said, well, Bill had been here, and he had inserted his poetic flourishes, and she has this moment where she says, "This is my speech," and she leaves the room in a huff to kind of go find the president, President Clinton, and so that's a very candid moment in the book.
My guests are Amy Parnas, the White House correspondent for The Hill newspaper in Washington, and Jonathan Allen, White House bureau chief for Politico. They have written HRC, State Secrets, and The Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. What do you think about Bill? Was he an asset during the campaign or a liability? Rand Paul has been trying to gain political traction by reminding the public of his scandals, and I'm assuming that if Hillary does wind up running for president again, that the Republicans are going to bring all that up again.
First, Leonard, let me note, since the book was published, I actually just moved to Bloomberg News from Politico, so just wanted to point that out. As far as Bill
Congratulations Clinton, for the new job.
Thank you. I'm very excited about it. As far as Bill Clinton goes and his usefulness and utility on the campaign trail, I think we've had sort of a Goldilocks sampling so far of how to use him or not use him. If you look at Al Gore in 2000, he distanced himself from Bill Clinton, thought the scandal at the end of the Clinton administration would be a problem. That was terrible for Al Gore. Everyone said after the election and even before it, that was a bad choice on his part. He should have figured out a way to use Bill Clinton. Hillary Clinton didn't have enough control over Bill Clinton in 2008. He got out there freelancing and said some things that were harmful to her campaign. That wasn't right either in terms of trying to win. And then Barack Obama in 2012 seemed to get just the right mix, where he had Bill Clinton going out to selected areas, giving speeches as a surrogate, but not interacting with the media, not doing any of that freelancing. And it worked very effectively for Barack Obama. And we actually go through that a lot in the book, the Bill Clinton 2012 campaign trail, where he's doing things not only for Barack Obama, but also for other candidates who might become important to Hillary Clinton later on in the process.
And do you think that he was as supportive of Barack Obama as he was because Hillary had become Secretary of State, had been named Secretary of State? I mean, that's a rather prestigious job.
I think it's a combination of things, and I think it took almost all 4 years for him to get to that point. And I think you had, you know, from a Democratic political perspective, you kind of got the Hall of Famer and the Rookie of the Year in terms of Clinton and Obama at the beginning of the administration, and they really didn't connect very well. But there was a political reason for Bill Clinton to get involved and invested in Barack Obama's reelection. I think Bill Clinton didn't think that Mitt Romney was the right guy for the presidency. And of course, it was very helpful for Hillary Clinton for him to be out there bringing the party together instead of splitting it up.
Well, Hillary had to return to the Senate after the election or after she lost the nomination. And that must have been rather humiliating. Harry Reid at least offer her any special things?
No, you know, that was the thing. There was no breathing room for her and no upward mobility. But her aides, we have a lighter moment in the book where her aides kind of soften the blow for her when she returned to the Senate. They were involved in a ping pong match to basically demonstrate to her that, you know, they all was well. They didn't want to kind of make her feel bad and say, oh, here you are back in the Senate. Sorry, you lost. So they tried to kind of lighten the moment a little bit. And she laughed, and she actually she watched the match happen, and then she gave one of her aides, the losing aide, some advice, and she said, "Be gracious in defeat," and that was kind of a little window into what she was thinking at the time.
We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we will talk about how she became Secretary of State and the job she did, and why she has been so successful in reinventing herself. With my guests, who are both Washington reporters, we have Jonathan Allen and Amy Parnas. Their book, HRC, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. It is published by Crown. Well, I've been getting everything wrong here. Amy's last name is Parnes. You're still the White House correspondent for The Hill newspaper, aren't you, Amy?
Oh, yeah.
And Jonathan Allen is now with Bloomberg, covering
right.
the White House. And they have collaborated on a book called HRC about the reinvention of Hillary Clinton, published by Crown. So it must have been shocking to his staff, members of his staff, when Barack Obama decided to offer Hillary the State Department job.
Yes, they were taken aback, and some of them tried to convince him not to offer the job to her. But as we go through in sort of detail in the book, that whole process. And there was a point at which once he had offered it and she was still considering it, it became clear that if she turned him down, that this would be something that would hurt him politically and something that ultimately would hurt her politically too, by virtue of the fact that she was hurting him politically. I mean, once he offered her that job, I mean, this sort of there was a sort of cosmic moment of political tension that took place as a result of it, and these fates were sort of brought together the minute that he did that in a way that they could never really sort of disentangle.
Well, wasn't there also a bit of political trading? He had to make some concessions to her?
Oh, yeah. Well, she basically said, okay, let's, at the end, after they, you know, she avoided him for a few times, and he said, come on, think about it, sleep on it. And then finally she said, okay, let's talk about conditions. And so that was a sign that that she was willing to take it. But she basically told him that she wanted to bring her people to state, none of his people. And so she had the trump card in that way, and she knew she had the trump card, and that's what she did.
Right. Once he agreed to that, that was sort of the big thing in Washington, because none of the people on his team who had worked on foreign policy were going to be able to go to the State Department. She handpicked a couple of Obama people to come with her. There was a technology guy, Alec Ross, who came over to the State Department with her, who had been a big Obama campaign guy. But for the most part, it was her own sort of island of Hillary Clinton people at the State Department, which was very unusual in government.
Although Obama reserved the right to appoint ambassadors, didn't he?
He did. He did. That was one thing that they had a little bit of a squabble over that, if you will. And he did. But we go into the book about one aide in particular, Capricia Marshall, who was the chief protocol officer. And she was involved in the campaign. The Obama guys hated her. And they were all in a meeting one day where they had to give a thumbs up or thumbs down. And they screamed obscenities, and they all voted thumbs down. And so Hillary had to come in and basically say, this is my person. You guys told me that I'm going to have her, or I'm going to have my people with me, and you're going to love her, and I'm bringing her. And so she did.
And it worked out okay.
She went to the president, and he overruled his own brain trust unanimous decision.
Well, the president also was a bit embarrassed. There was a photograph published in the Washington Post of Jon Favreau, Obama's chief speechwriter. Unfortunately, I didn't remember that when he came on our show, that there was this picture of him cupping her breast in a cutout of Hillary.
Yes, there was a little bit of a scandal, a mini Washington scandal over it. Jon Favreau, who happens to be my neighbor, in full disclosure, my next-door neighbor, he was actually cupping her breast in this cardboard cutout, and it caused a little bit of a scandal. It made headlines, and he was freaking out a little bit about it, and he ended up, he and a bunch of Obama aides got together with some Clinton aides to kind of soften it and issue a statement, and then he was worried about how to deal with her, and Hillary ends up calling him on his cell phone and says, I haven't seen the picture, but I hear my hair looks great. Uh-huh. So there's a moment of levity. And
she does understand from other circumstances that sometimes boys will be boys.
So she let him off the hook.
Yeah.
She's done that for a number of people in the Obama administration over the years. I think it shows that while the Clintons keep track of what people do, I think when somebody's earnestly trying to get back in their good graces, there's also that opportunity.
Well, she immediately started remaking the State Department, didn't she? The CIA and the military had taken over quite a bit of power from the State Department during the Bush years, and it was one of her first goals to reclaim some of that?
Yeah, the footprint of American foreign policy during the Bush years was a combat boot, and I think she wanted to get that a little closer to a wingtip, so that it wasn't just us coming in with guns and tanks, and instead actually trying to engage our neighbors in diplomacy. So she did a lot of things. First and foremost, she hired a pretty impressive staff around her. I mean, she brought in Richard Holbrook, the venerable diplomat, as a special envoy, and she brought in George Mitchell as a special envoy to the Middle East, and she brought in Jack Lew, the current Treasury Secretary, as a new Deputy Secretary of State, a position he filled that had not been filled before. And I think it was a message to the rest of the government. She was going to be serious and play ball and was going to be a player with the administration.
Considering what you know, were you surprised by what Robert Gates said about her in his recent memoir?
No, not at all. I mean, we talk about this in the book. She very smartly aligned with him very early on. They became very good friends. They would have dinner together. They made it known that they were allies. And I think that helped her in a way. You know, she's seen as a hawk, and that will, I think, help her if she runs in 2016.
But isn't that what hurt her against Barack Obama?
Right. So in a general election, that's potentially helpful. In a primary, it could be destructive to her, as it was in 2008.
Because everybody associated her with her vote for going to war with Iraq.
Exactly. And so I think one of the interesting things that we talk about in the book is there are several decisions that get made in foreign policy during the first term of the Obama administration where she splits with Joe Biden, and she's the hawk and he's the dove. He wants to get out of Afghanistan as soon as possible. She wants a surge. She wants to go into Libya, create a coalition for war. He thinks that's a bad idea. He's not sure that the bin Laden raid is a good idea. He's not sold on it. She says, let's go do it. And one of the things that I think is interesting about that is that despite her 2008 loss in a Democratic primary based on her Iraq vote, her basic worldview didn't change. And there's political peril in that potentially, obviously, if somebody runs against her in a Democratic primary.
You say she has a bias for action, which also would have made her like General Petraeus. What happened after Petraeus had his personal scandal? Did she reach out to him?
She did reach out to him, and we talk about this a little bit in the book, but she sends him a note and she says, I have some experience dealing with this. You know, it was very telling for her. They had formed a little bit of a friendship. They had scrapped over a hearing in 2007 and didn't come into the administration on good terms, but she kind of sought to win him over. And so she invited him over for a couple of evenings of wine drinking and sought to form a friendship with him, too. And I think that was pretty telling.
My guests are Amy Parnes and Jonathan Allen. Their book is called HRC. It is about Hillary Rodham Clinton and the possibility of a run for the presidency kind of ends this book. It is published by Crown. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What were her meta objectives in state? She had a theory of smart power.
Right. Smart power is something coined by Joseph Nye, who's an academic, but has really been glommed onto by Hillary Clinton and others in her world. She really wants to use all the tools in America's foreign policy toolkit. Not just sanctions as, you know, sort of the hardball end of it, not just offering economic deals and trade as the sort of the soft end of going into a partnership with other countries, but to really use all of them, to find the right mix for each country. And I think that was one of her meta objectives, was to do that. The other was to rebrand America in the world, to make sure that some of the relationships that had become that had deteriorated during the Bush administration were strengthened.
But when you're head state, you have a complicated situation. You have career people, and then you have people who come in with the new administration, leave for other jobs, other people come in. Was she a good administrator?
By all accounts, she was. We talked to people who were in her inner circle. We talked to people at the upper echelons of the State Department who were not part of the Clinton world before this. We talked to people mid-level, at low-level, career people, foreign service officers, ambassadors. And what we came back with was a view that people really thought that she devoted herself to understanding and advancing diplomacy and development, which are the sort of two foreign policy things other than defense. So I think there was a strong reaction to her at the State Department as somebody who was good for the building, so to speak, in the Foggy Bottom neighborhood in Washington, and particularly very attentive to the little details in people's lives that motivate them to work harder.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning of her tenure at State, wasn't there a feeling that Obama and the National Security Council staff were really running America's foreign policy?
There was. There was a little bit of tension over that. And, you know, there was tension between the career staff and her people. And there was some tension, actually. We get into this. You know, people thought that she was bringing the campaign scandals with her, you know, because she was bringing all these political people with her. And we talk about this one story in the book where one of her press people, Philippe Reines, is basically gets into a little bit of a thing with a reset button. and it shows, and there were headlines written at the time saying, oh, Hillary's not going to be able to escape the drama of the campaign. Look what her people are doing. And so we get into that a little bit in the book.
And were they able to work things out with the Obama staff, or was there a tension for quite a while?
I think there was a tension for quite a while, certainly the first year or so, maybe even for some people even till today. But in particular, I think they take their cues from the leaders. The president's aides take their cues from him. Her aides take their cues from her. And what you saw is as soon as they stopped having fights over personnel, which really was sort of the end of the first year, things got a lot warmer between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. They in particular came together in Copenhagen at a World Environmental Summit at which they sort of did diplomacy together, hand in hand.
But it took a while to get there, I should add. You know, there was a moment we talk about on both sides where the president had to scold his aides at one point and say, you know, don't do that. That's knock it off. And she had to turn to her advisors at the same time and say, he's the president. Cut it out. So, you know, there was a lot of that fighting still in the first year.
And at the same time, Hillary still was under Bill Clinton's shadow for many people. She was in Congo, I remember, and someone asked her husband's opinion on an issue, not hers as the Secretary of State.
Yes, someone with no fear asked her that question.
Well, that was kind of stupid, right?
I can't imagine, you know, after serving as First Lady and Senator and as Secretary of State, getting asked places you go around the world about your husband's opinion. I can only imagine what was going through her head. And she had a nasty reaction, which was, my husband's not the Secretary of State. I am. And there were headlines all over the place about that. I think there was some sympathy from the Obama folks for her. There was some stories about, her folks say that there was a mistranslation of what the person said. But clearly she reacted to what she thought was sort of a challenge to her role.
Now, we only have a limited time left, so I want to go over some of the things, the successes and the problems. Okay. Well, her first success was smoothing over relations with China over the World's Fair.
Yeah, we tell a really good story, and I think that this can be viewed on multiple levels. There was going to be a World Expo in Shanghai in 2010. The United States was not building a pavilion there. The Chinese complained to her on her first trip there in February of 2009. She said she didn't know anything about it. She went back and immediately assigned one of her close political aides, a guy named Chris Balderston, to raise about $60 million in a year from the private sector. And by the way, she couldn't be directly involved in the solicitation of money. So they had to figure out ways to use the Clinton network to raise all this cash. They did that, Balderston and former Ambassador Elizabeth Bagley and a couple of others. So they were able to get that done. It looked like it was going to be a disaster. The Chinese were very upset we weren't participating, almost like pulling out of an Olympics. And at the end, the United States had a kind of so-so pavilion, but at least they had a
pavilion. We had a presence.
And, you know, Obama's kind of learning from that right now. You see that he's pulling more private-public partnerships together. So he's kind of taking a cue from her in a way.
And now, it's also interesting, she used the same loophole in law to raise money from the private sector that Kathleen Sebelius did to raise money from the private sector for the big healthcare push, Enroll America. Kathleen Sebelius took a lot of flack for that, a lot of criticism for it. Hillary Clinton did it under the radar. Nobody even noticed.
Now, Arab Spring was both positive and negative for her. She scored high points for Libya, scored lower points for Egypt, and then there was Benghazi.
It's a
I'm rushing things, but
No. What I was going to say is,
don't want to ignore them.
Well, from a Libya perspective, putting together a coalition, the international coalition that she helped put together to go in and get rid of Gaddafi, isn't in of itself a tremendous show of diplomacy and of understanding of not just the government in Washington, but the governments in foreign capitals. And I think, anybody who watched that would say that's an impressive coalition she put together. The question is, was it to do the right thing? Was it good for America to do that, to take out Gaddafi? We're obviously very heavily engaged in Libya. We've seen the outcome of what happened in Benghazi with four Americans dying, including the ambassador to Libya. We haven't seen the total outcome for the country of Libya, but certainly there's a mixed bag there.
And Benghazi is still being hung around her neck.
It is, and it's going to be an issue for her, no doubt. We talk to Republicans in this book who say, including Sean Spicer, who is the communications director for the Republican National Committee, and he basically says she can get used to hearing this over and over again.
What about the assassination of Osama bin Laden? Liam Panetta thought he knew where bin Laden was in Abbottabad. Did he go to Hillary to get her okay before he pushed it further?
He did. Not so much to get her okay, but to get her support. In probably February of 2011, he saw her in the Situation Room and said, hey, I got to come talk to you about something. He shows up at the State Department for a one-on-one meeting with her, nobody else around, and he lays out what he's got. And basically his problem was this. The White House could be very deliberative. The Pentagon could be very risk-averse in terms of going after things. They weren't 100% sure that bin Laden was there. They weren't sure how they wanted to take him out if they did.
It could have been a big embarrassment.
Right. And what Leon Panetta or any number of things that, could go wrong. So Leon Panetta thought Hillary Clinton is somebody who will understand the importance of moving on this and moving on this fast. He went to talk to her about it. She basically agreed. She wanted to see all of the evidence, everything, but she was basically all in. She represented New York on 9/11. She had always come at the question of bin Laden from that frame through years of hearings on Capitol Hill. We continue to bring up bin Laden every chance she got. Where are we on that? And so Panetta, as one of his aides put it, one intelligence community official put it to us, was convinced that she had a bias for action and that she would make the case. And she, in fact, did against Vice President Biden, against Secretary Gates. And if you think about it, had she taken the position that Gates and Biden did, you'd have a president who would have been in the position of going against his top three officials in going after bin Laden. He might not have done that, and this certainly provides some political cover when his primary opponent from 08 goes in on him. So there's a lot of things going on in that discussion.
We have less than a minute left, but I'm wondering whether she left the Secretary of State's job because she's preparing to make a run for the presidency.
I think she's running. I said this yesterday, but 99.999% she's running. And I think the trains are rolling, and this is going to be her time to do it.
She turned down the president's request on Air Force One in a one-on-one session in November. He asked her to stay on, and she said no. And the real reason to do that is because you want to rest up for something.
Mm-hmm. But I also get the feeling from what you've said that she has changed the State Department and regained some of its power back. Do you think that will be a lasting legacy?
I think it depends a lot on the president. I think it depends on how much the president wants diplomacy to be part of his foreign policy or her foreign policy.
My great thanks to both of you. Jonathan Allen is the White House. Are you the bureau chief?
I'm a White House correspondent for Bloomberg News.
And Amy Parnes is the White House correspondent for The Hill newspaper. They have collaborated on a book called HRC, Hillary Rodham Clinton, obviously, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. It is published by Crown. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
You too, Leonard.
Fun
Thank
chat.
You.
Thank you.